But you come in hungry, it'll spend right fast. Kirkland don't tap into us as much as he does some in this ville.
I know what I need.
JB reached into his shirt pocket and showed her one of the shotgun's flechette rounds.
Seen anything like that?
The girl took the shell between her fingers and turned it carefully to catch the weak light streaming down from the street lanterns.
12-gauge?
Yeah.
Special load?
Flechettes.
Heard of them, but I never saw a shell like this. Afraid we can't help you.
Anna, you let that man in here right now!
Yes, sir, Daddy.
When Anna stepped back from the doorway, she took a step to the side, keeping her gun hand clear.
But, Mr. Dix, I warn you not to make any sudden moves.
I'll surely keep that in mind.
He stepped into the darkened room. Blinking rapidly, he brought his night vision up to speed. The forward room of the building was small and bare. Gun ports cut into the wall on the other side looked like yawning demons' mouths, even in the shadows trapped inside the room. Hard metal gleamed inside. JB raised his hands, making sure to keep them away from his body.
If this is going to make everybody this tense, maybe we can do this another day.
If I don't like what I see, I reckon we won't see you again tomorrow. Neither will anybody else.
Well, then hurry up and make up your mind, because I've got to scratch my nose something fierce, and I don't want to get shot for my trouble. Can't imagine anything worse than getting a belly full of double-odd buckshot and dying kind of slow while your nose is itching the whole time.
You want to move away from that door? I gotta lock up.
2 steps to my right, and I'm gonna take them slow. Count them for you. 1.
His mind was working the angles automatically, weighing the risks. It was possible he could whirl and yank the young woman into the way, then hit the door running and get away before he got shot. But he was curious, too, because this wasn't at all the kind of reception he'd expected to receive after Kirkland's invitation.
2.
That's fine. Anna, get that door now.
I'm gonna take his guns too, Daddy.
No, you stay away from that man. If he's who he says he is, you'll be dead before I could tell you was in trouble.
Anna ripped her gun free of the holster and trained it on JB as well.
Well then, I guess we're gonna have to decide what to do with him. Personally, I'm all for killing him and being done with it.
Doc glanced down at his small companion.
It's not too much further now.
The dwarf kept his hands on the holstered 38s. Long shadows filled the warren of alleyways in front of Doc. He guessed that they were in the older section of the ville. Hazard had been built from some good timbers, planed and put together with skill. But here in the center of the ville, where the rest of the community had evidently sprung from, most of the buildings remained cobbled together structures made from cast-offs of other buildings. Cobb's turned out to be one of the oldest buildings. It was a narrow 2-story structure, its eaves made of abandoned garage doors. Whitewash covered the surfaces, but those surfaces possessed an ill fit. Plaster caulking hung in thick coats over the cracks and joints. Yellow light showed through at the top and bottom of the door, leaking through from a lantern beyond. The light also lit up a wide pane of glass with Cobb's Bookstore hand-lettered across it. Masking tape held fragments of the glass together. On the other side of the window was a group of small round tables and straight-backed chairs. A counter stood farther back, a dark rectangular shadow in front of the lantern hanging on the wall. A cigarette coal glowed orange in the darkness. Albert walked to the door and reached up for the bell string. Doc stood on the uneven porch beside the little man and watched as 2 shadows got up from the tables inside. Doc felt edgy and tense in spite of Albert's camaraderie. With the door cracked open, a thin strip of a man's face and 1 piercing eye flicked over Doc, going from up to down and back again.
Howdy, Albert. Something I can do for you?
I brought a friend, Cobb. Has an interest in books and such.
Hey, you're going armed. Where's Liberty and his gang?
Chilled by this man and his friends. Liberty's probably been turned to crow shit from the looks of things when I last left him.
He chilled Liberty? And he's walking around Hazard all straight up and all? Hard to believe.
Oh, believe it. I was there. And now I got these blasters to show it.
You should have just run on, my little friend. And you, old-timer, you should have never come here. Because you surely signed your death warrant. Or hasn't the little man told you that?
Oh, I hadn't.
Albert painted both guns at Doc.
Oh, damn it, Cobb. job. I was planning on telling him at a better time than this.
Duck fisted his sword stick. He couldn't believe the dwarf's allegiance had turned so quickly.
Don't do nothing, Stoop. I'd hate to shoot you, Doc, but I don't aim to die because you're overreacting to bad news. Maybe it isn't as bad as you think.
I saved your life by my own hand, and I bade my friends trust you as they trusted me. Now you betray that trust. If you know your books, as you have assured me you do, you will know a passage from Plutarch that was attributed to Julius Caesar and is most appropriate for this moment. I love treason, but hate a traitor.
Get on inside the building, Doc. Cobb, take that cane away from him and relieve him of his blaster.
Cobb grasped his shoulder and guided him into the structure. Two other men spread out before him, weapons gleaming in their hands. Doc glanced around the small room, but his chances of escape were as dim as the lantern light. Dean turned into the grade of the broken land outside of Hazard.
Can't shake him! Gonna have to take him!
He carried the Browning high power in his fist. Glancing over his shoulder, he spotted the five tattooed men they'd picked up tailing them. The Coldhearts rode horses and carried rifles across the pommels of their saddles. The intent and the wariness they displayed left no doubts about what they planned. Despite the run through Hazard, Jack and Dean hadn't been able to throw their pursuers off the trail. The men had clung stubbornly, guessing where the two youngsters had headed. Finally, at the stables, they'd been cornered and driven out of the ville. And that was the part that Dean couldn't really figure. The five men hadn't tried outright to kill them, but they'd left no doubts in his mind, or Jack's. Still, there'd been nothing to do except be driven before them. Dean hauled up short behind a thick bold oak, thinking about how his father and the rest of the companions had set to and chilled Liberty and his gang without warning. He peered through the shadows and saw Jack only a few feet from him. The albino carefully worked a water bladder they had taken from the stables. Jack had emptied it in one of the stalls, then drained the oil from three lanterns before they'd climbed through the roof and escaped into the brush. That had been when they had first discovered that the men had at least two silenced handguns among them.
Not much time, Dean. This needs to happen quick.
What?
Take them. Chill them fast. Then find out why they not try to chill us fast, too.
The fact that the five men hadn't been trying to blast through the brush had bothered Dean some. The only time they had been fired upon had been back at the stable. With the silenced weapons, the Coldhearts could have tried to blast them back at the Gaudy house. Maybe killed them, too. But they hadn't.
Say when, Jack?
Stay here. Wait for signal.
What signal?
Jack melted into the shadows.
You know when you see it.
Dean sidled up to the tree, took up a two-handed grip on the Browning, and aimed at the riders. He braced his arm against the tree trunk. The Coldhearts waited for their quarries to break cover. Less than 50 yards away, Dean got a better look at the rifles two of them carried. They weren't regular weapons, like his father's Steyr. The weapons they had looked more like long cylindrical tubes mounted on gun stocks. JB probably would have recognized the make and model, but Dean thought it was good enough that he recognized they were compressed air guns. More questions assailed his mind, but then time for thinking was well past. A pale shadow drifted along behind the horses, cutting through the brush with an unnatural speed. A spark flared, then a flaming object slammed against the man in the center of the five, drenching him with dark liquid. The flames spread across the dark liquid, licking eagerly at the man on the horse. His animal broke into a sudden run, hindquarters buckling as it tried to drag its rear onto the ground. The sudden movement threw the man from the saddle. Revealed in the light given off by the burning man and the burning horse, Jack splintered up behind the man on the outside, out of Dean's field of fire. The albino put his hands on the horse's rear and vaulted aboard.
What the?
Jack reached around the rider and seized the reins in the pommel, holding himself and the rider on, his other hand wrapped up under the man's chin. The moonlight glinted over the metal.
Now, Dean!
Dean swiveled his sights over the man closest to him. The other men jockeyed to control their horses and bring their guns to bear on Jack. Dean curled his finger over the high power's trigger. Realization that they were caught between their prey gripped the remaining two riders at once. Both put spurs to their mounts. One rode for Jack, while the other crashed through the brush where Dean stood. Dean kept his position, standing his ground. He brought up his gun. He centered the sights over his target's chest as the man raced toward him. But the horse unexpectedly raised its head. Before Dean could fire another shot, the man leapt from the stumbling animal. He vanished into the brush, and Dean knew that their trap had suddenly turned deadly again. Jack maintained his hold on his hostage with difficulty as the horse reared and staggered under their combined weight. Jack kept a steady pressure on the reins, holding the horse from bolting and running. The albino locked his right arm under his hostage's chin.
Move, or you die.
We gotta be chilled in a minute anyway. Hiram ain't gonna crawfish. He don't give a fuck if he kills me too.
Jack watched the man bringing his horse around to face them. The man had lost control over his mount for a moment when the burning man had dropped at his horse's hooves. He pulled his rifle to his shoulder.
Yeah.
Jack's horse vaulted over the burning man on the grass, and then crashed against the horse carrying the man with a rifle. Expertly, Jack flipped a leaf-bladed knife at the rifleman. The blade stuck deep through the man's eye and into the brain tissue beyond. Before his hostage could try to break away, Jack drew his Colt Python and placed the barrel against the back of the man's head. Jack pulled on the reins, swinging the horse back in the direction where the surviving Colt Hart had gone to brush in front of Dean. The man was gone. Jack raked the area with his gaze, but he didn't see Dean either. Both of them had vanished. Then Jack spotted movement to the right of the tree where Dean had been. But he had no idea if the movement belonged to friend or foe. JB kept his hands raised as he looked across the barrel of Anna's gun. He didn't say anything. Words weren't his forte. But he figured that Mildred would be mighty angry if he got himself killed, especially since he'd turned down the offer of a roll in the hay to get his business with the gunsmith taken care of first. If it came down to it, he'd see the young woman before him dead before he allowed himself to get killed.
Are you really J.B. Dix?
Yeah.
The one that rode with the traitor in the Shens on Warwag 1?
Can't say there was ever any other.
Saw you once, a long time ago. But the light's bad, my eyes aren't what they was.
Hoping your good sense is. If I have to, I reckon I'm gonna find out how good your girl here is. Now, I'm not a man to sit for long under the barrel of a blaster. Comes time to shit or get off the pot.
You're about 2 pounds pressure away from death right now, mister. I wouldn't go getting all puffed up about your situation and how bastard tough you are.
You're just pushing me that much closer to taking the decision out of your hands. I've got no backup in me when it comes to taking a hand in gunplay.
Put that blaster away.
Don't know that that's a good idea.
Long as you live under my roof, you're gonna be bound by my word. You don't holster that piece, I'll chill you and bury you myself.
All right. Another time, maybe, Mr. Dix.
Not if I have a choice. Be ashamed to chill a woman who seems to know so much about firearms. Okay if I put my arms down, Phillips? I'm losing feeling in my fingers.
Go ahead.
J.B. lowered his arms, but continued to move slowly. At the other end of the room, a section of the wall popped forward and dropped into grooves on the floor and across the ceiling. The wall soon revealed a doorway beyond. A hunchbacked old man stood in the doorway, looking like he was carrying a pack on his back because of the deformity. But he carried an oiled Mac 11 in a gnarled fist that looked two sizes too big for the rest of his body. The man's face was covered by gray hair and a thick gray beard that didn't quite disguise the scarring that had eroded his features.
Tinker Phillips?
That's me. People tell me I'm an ugly old bastard to my face, but that don't mean I take kindly to it.
I didn't come here to look at you.
Damn, but some traitor must have rubbed off on you. That old fucker was pure mean through and through. Man couldn't handle what he had to say, ought not to ask him what was on his mind.
I've got a line of credit, put up by Kirkland. Wanted to see what I could get for it.
Kirkland's a smart man, but he's got the conscience of a rabid dog.
You're the first person in Hazard I've heard speak out against him.
That's because you haven't talked to everybody in our happy little ville.
Phillips hung the Mac-11 in a specialty holster at his right side, then turned and walked into the room beyond.
Come on in and sit a spell.
J.B. followed the old man, noting how the hump was large enough and high enough that it almost made Phillips look like he had two heads in the darkness. Phillips held a match, banishing a few of the shadows. He cupped the flame in his hands and moved it toward a lantern another man held out. Light spread out over the room, illuminating tables and chairs and a couple sofas spread out across a generous living space. Barren walls enclosed the space, holding no windows and no decorations. Two long rectangular tables sat at one end. Four men sat around the farthest one. All of the men had handguns on the table in front of them. Close in beside the metal plates, piled high with beans and meat, thick chunks of carrots and potatoes. A tray of yellow cornbread acted as a centerpiece for the table.
Have you ate since you've been in the ville?
No.
You're welcome to our table.
He gestured toward the small wood stove in the corner. Two big pots sat on the surface, steam still rising up from both.
Bread's fresh, just out of the oven.
JB noted the design with interest. He'd seen many like it, had even helped build several when he'd been a kid back in Cripple Creek. The residual heat from the wood stove was channeled up through the flue, and a baking box was built off the main pipe. But the flue on this stove didn't run straight up as most did. Instead, it ran off to the side and disappeared through a wall.
Got it run so it can't get blocked off?
Out back of the main building. Tapped into a fireplace with a glass maker. He runs his ovens most of the time because he's always making glassware. Folks use it for canning what goods they raise and for being sociable. We don't cook unless the glassmaker's working.
And if he gets sick or takes a day off?
Hardtack and cold biscuits. You think we don't say some prayers for that old glassmaker come sick season in winter, you got yourself another thank coming.
The man at the table had a full beard and a thick scar over his left eye that had blue tattooing from a gunshot fired close.
Nobody notices you don't have a smoke flue?
We got one. Even run smoke through it on occasion. But tying it into our main system here and letting Kirkland and his people have us at their mercy ain't a risk we're willing to take.
I'll take a plate.
Phillips reached up into a cupboard and took down a metal plate. After covering the plate with a large portion of meat, beans, and vegetables, Phillips took a big spoon from a glass near the sink. JB walked to the table where the other men were and sat down. One of them shoved the bread over.
Got your own will, too?
Course. Have to be self-sufficient for the necessities.
As JB ate, he began to get a different picture of Hazard. That he didn't like what he was looking at.
None of Kirkland's people have been this far into my gun shop since we rebuilt it.
What have you got against Kirkland?
JB kept both hands on the table, watching the company he was in. Anna stood against the wall to his left, deliberately on the wrong side for him to make a quick draw against, and in a position that gave her a full field of fire without endangering anyone else in the room. The five men in the room, besides the gunsmith, were all hard and rangy. They kept their eyes on him.
Same as most other people in the ville who kind of want to run their own lives. He keeps us here. Won't let us go.
Seems like you got yourself a small army here. Don't see how you could be kept from leaving if that's what you decided you wanted to do.
Looking on the face of it, that's what you'd think. But that's just looking on the face of it. My mama, God rest her soul, popped me out of her belly after being exposed to a hot rat area on an overland trip my daddy took when he should have been seeing to it she stayed comfortable. You look at me now, you see a man been down some hard roads. Can you imagine what I must have looked like when I was some pissant newborn? I mean, we're born into this world ugly anyway. But me...
Must have been a sight.
Damn straight it was. My daddy, he was all ready to stove in my head and be done with it. Only Mama didn't let him. Said she'd buried enough dead births, and I was the first one born live. Figured she had something wrong with her insides. He left her, but she managed to keep us both alive. Turns out I was real good with my hands. By 10 and 12 years old, I was helping feed us by working on things other people brought to us.
You gonna eat, or did I take your plate?
We eat in shifts, in case of poisoning.
You trade out for food?
Yeah. No room for a garden down here, and got no place to raise beef either. Gives us a certain vulnerability.
So you eat far enough apart that the symptoms would show up?
Yeah.
And if somebody gets poisoned?
Simple. I blow up the building and go out of business. Want some coffee sub to go with that meal?
JB nodded. Phillips looked at one of the young men, who got up and took the coffee pot from the stove.
So what's keeping you here?
The plague!
Doc's mind raced, trembling at the edge of uncertainty by the bizarre turn of events. He struggled to maintain his hold on reality, but was reminded of a frigate that he'd shipped on, not knowing where, not remembering why, and certainly without knowledge due to his own patchy history of when that had